What's up, OU fans? Your host, Noah Friggin here, and we are doing another episode of Season 2 of Opportunity Unlocked. Thank you for tuning in. This episode is with Ali Dalla. Ali is CEO and co-founder of Finneo, the insurtech startup empowering insurance advisors with intelligent digital tools and transforming them into bionic advisors. He is a former banker at TD. He was employee number one at a startup acquired by Benefits by Design, which he joined as managing partner. And he also co-founded Tricelerate, a not-for-profit tech incubator in his hometown of Coquitlam, British Columbia. Ali is a straight up homie. When I've been at a crossroads in my life, he's always been the perfect guy to call. He's also a fellow basketball player, and dare I say it, the Ifrigan Dalla debate amongst the masses has always been pretty much just as heated as the Jordan LeBron debate, if only our primes coincided. All right, episode 4 of Opportunity Unlocked, season 2 starts now. Ali, my man, it's a pleasure to have you on the pod, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Noah.
You know, we've had some unreal conversations in the past, you and I, over beers, over the phone, about your experience at Finneo as a leader, as an entrepreneur, the hand-to-hand combat you fought as a founder of a tech company based in Toronto. How are things at Finneo going? What's the last year been like for you guys?
Well, you know, first of all, just a quick kind of background for your audience. Finneo is an insurtech, venture-backed insurtech, building a very complicated business in life and complex insurance. So we're a marketplace where we offer insurance companies a no-code toolkit to digitize products, put them into our ecosystem. And then we build software to help independent insurance brokers and their clients to go from prospect to policy. And so, there's an origin story there that we can get into at some point. But in terms of the last year, I mean, wow, for any founder trying to navigate COVID, it was quite an experience, right? On the one side, our entire industry in insurance, for the most part, is like paper-based and fax-based, as crazy as it sounds. And it was basically brought to its knees. Like you couldn't get a nurse to come to your home to do a health check. Most people couldn't go to visit a doctor for any sort of underwriting reasons. So it was really hard. And then especially for a company like ours that was, you know, venture backed and was expecting to close a financing round last year, it just added a whole nother layer of complexity around, you know, how do you actually continue to grow during this time? You know, what are the things that you can control? What can't you control? And where do you put your energy and focus? And, you know, for us, there was a couple of moments there that were super hard, just like many other companies had to go through. But what really helped us go through it was sticking to our core values and kind of being very mission focused, being very vision focused, and controlling our destiny on technology and product, which is something that we could 100% control versus we couldn't really control what the markets were going to do or what sentiment from investors was going to be. So it was really just a good lesson to, you know, stay hyper zoned in on the things that you can control and almost block out the noise of the rest.
And staying mission focused, staying value focused, what does that mean for you guys at Finneo?
Yeah, so a couple of things. I mean, on the one side, like, why did Finneo get started, right? So my co-founder and I, well, specifically me before I got into tech, I was a financial advisor and I was helping families through the 2008-2009 collapse and kind of being in the trenches, going through really hard times with families dealing with death and divorce and businesses closed. It kind of teaches you the importance of a relationship between a household and a financial professional. And so, you know, our mission as a company is to bridge the digital divide between insurance carriers, brokers, and customers. And you literally could not have a better mission in the time of a pandemic where you couldn't see a customer face to face. You couldn't process paper as an insurance company. And so it really brought to life that what we were doing is the most important thing to help our industry move forward. And waking up with that mission every single day was critical. So just making sure that we're reminding the team why we exist, reminding the team the type of impact that we're making, and reminding the team that if Finneo was fully functional, live, and integrated across the industry wouldn't be brought to its knees the way that it had been. So it was just a really great reminder that what we're doing is super valuable work and we're making true impact. And then on the value side, I mean, you know, look, core values, for some companies are just words on a wall, right? For us, we used it as an opportunity to go back to our teams and really talk deeply about what we believed are the right values for people that are operating principles at Finio. And then from there, kind of going through a deep exercise on retrenching those values, rolling them back out, and then creating a you're in or you're out type kind of mission in the business, which is you either align with these core values or you don't. And if you're here, you're going to live by them. And if you're here and you're not living by them, you're not going to be here much longer. And so it really gave the team, both from a mission perspective and a values perspective, something to really keep them focused on during a time that was extremely uncertain for all of us.
I can imagine. I think, having values internally at the company that you work at is going to be hugely helpful, not only for the company, but for the constituents, for the individuals at the company who are also facing that uncertainty themselves.
For sure. And I think, one of my mentors says something to me that, rings in my head all the time, which is, core values are not what you say, they're what you do, and they're what you do every day. And, I think as leaders, our job is to be the people who are exuding those values every single day and holding the bar, right? Like my co-founder and I, we talk a lot about like never split the difference on values. Because if you start going down the path where you're going to bend and break your values, then you have no backbone. And if you have no backbone, then like what is the point of even working together? And so that's something that we hold very near and dear to both of our hearts.
Kind of a tangential question off that. In terms of exceptions, making exceptions when it comes to values, do you have a philosophy on that at all?
Yeah. So, personal experience, when I've made those exceptions, it's been catastrophic as a result. So what I learned kind of going through, again, mistakes as a founder, mistakes as growing as an executive, is you just don't split the difference on values. In fact, you just make it very clear that you're never going to split the difference on values. And if that becomes a problem for somebody, they just can't be in your company. Because they're just too important. It's just too important to make sure that there's alignment. And you're only as strong as your weakest link. And if your core values have a weak link in it, you might as well just break the company up because it's not going to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And so values being actions, I think that's very interesting. It's difficult to close the gap between actions and values. That's something I think about a lot in my own life, is you have a set of core values, acting upon them, closing the gap between that and your actions is difficult. But you're saying, scrap the whole sort of gap there. If it's not an action, it's not a value.
Yeah. At least that's the way I think about it, right? So I'll give you a couple of examples. So if you have kind of core values, I'll give you a few of ours. Accountability, own your outcomes. So for us, what does that mean? It means truly taking ownership, putting in the best work of your career, and everybody pulling their own weight. So you can use this now in verbiage, but towards action orientation. So let's say, for example, we're going through a hiring process. Now, a hiring manager has a responsibility and an accountability to their team to keep us up to date on the process, tell us how the candidate interviews are coming along, making sure they're delivering great feedback, making sure that we're living and interviewing based on our values, right? And so it kind of allows people to have a framework of how to operate, but using the words and the descriptions of those words as action-oriented things. Another one, like, again, bumper sticker type. Transparency. Well, we talk about it as being open and honest. So each one of our business leaders or unit leaders has a communication framework. How do they work within their units? How do they work cross-functionally? And how do they disseminate information both up the chain and down the chain? So we're creating clear context, we're creating safe spaces for people, and most importantly, we're creating consistency. So again, those are like ways that you can drive as a leader action from your core values.
Gotcha. I love that. And I think, it speaks to your qualities as a leader and Finio's success. I saw this was making headlines around this time last year, but I saw that you guys helped advisors place over $1 billion in coverage for Canadian families. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. I think there's a lot of impact that financial professionals make on households, and to be able to cross that threshold of $1 billion was a big mile marker for the business. And, we've recently hit another big milestone, which is we've launched in the US, and that's a big, for a Canadian company, that's a huge, huge milestone. So yeah, we're super excited.
Amazing. And this is, a nice segue into something I want to talk about with you. You came from a financial background working at the TD Banking Division, Coquitlam, British Columbia, beautiful town, and yeah. Which is where you grew up, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah.
Amazing. So I wanted to talk about with you the value in
you know, starting your career, maybe more so in the corporate world, learning from those experiences and then transitioning into entrepreneurship versus having that entrepreneurial conviction from absolutely day one. And not necessarily that you didn't have that, but more so that you took a path that ventured through the corporate world first.
Yeah, I think, look, a lot of people look at their corporate time and they'll be like, oh, you know, that's not a lot of fun. But I think just like most things in life, it's what you make of it. And corporate gives you an awesome springboard to, first of all, learn how to be a great professional, like how to conduct yourself in a professional manner, how to deal with disagreements, how to be very organized and learn how to write really well, and just the kind of foundational skills that you require if you're ever going to be a great professional, whether that's an entrepreneur or within corporate. So the first thing I really took away was like great operating principles and really great structure. And then from there, you know, at least at my experience at TD, I mean, I was very lucky where they invested a lot of time, effort, and money into professional development for me. So, you know, in my early 20s, I got a chance to be a part of a leadership development team. And we were just given everything the bank could throw at us in terms of resources and coaching to really teach us how to be executives. And, you know, by the time I left that place in my mid-20s, like, I was ready to operate at a very, very high level. And I think that that has helped me in my career in many different ways, but also has helped me in Fineo specifically engaging with insurance company executives. And so you kind of know how to talk the talk with them. You can be in a boardroom, at least, you know, pre-COVID, and feel very comfortable in a room with 12 executives in a boardroom all wearing suits. And it's like, and Noah, you know me, I'd show up in my Jordans, but like that yeah, you kind would. Of like that comfort level, you know, I got that because I grew up in corporate. But then the other thing is, you know, TD in particular had a really great entrepreneurial type spirit. And I kind of always saw myself as an intrapreneur. Like I was in there in a big bank, but I was an entrepreneur within the bank. I was creating noise and always coming up with ideas and like challenging the status quo. And I think it taught me that, you know, I could do really innovative things that just, I had to push the bar real far. And yeah, I probably rubbed a few people the wrong way and probably a little bit aggressive in my younger days, maybe more than I should have been, but I got some interesting stuff done at a big company that otherwise wouldn't have happened. And so I find that I got a really blessed experience. And I think, again, we just shouldn't be so like, oh, corporate sucks. Like, no, corporate sucks if you think it sucks and you don't actually go and do anything about your opportunity. In my case, my mentors were great, taught me a lot of things, and I invested deeply into trying to create change in a place I care deeply about.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. It is absolutely what you make of it. I love that you've included that here. And so, you know, you mentioned some things it did prepare you for. What are things that it didn't prepare you for? And you felt completely just at a loss when you had to start doing that after founding Fineo?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, before Fineo, I'd been the first employee at an insurtech startup that ended up getting acquired. And so I think the thing that really was different was just the pace and the speed, right? There's this saying that like in the startup world, a week is a month compared to enterprise. A month is a quarter and a quarter is a year. So you're flying at a startup and there's no downtime and you're just going 0 to 100, like real fast, you know, like real fast. And you never take your foot off the gas pedal. And I think that there's this, like, when do you reset and recharge? Where in corporate, you know, you can take a couple of weeks and just slow it down for a minute and nobody really notices. And so I think pace was a real big one. The other was just the freedom to operate, right? Like in corporate, you just have to go up and down the chain for approvals every single time you want to do something. Like I was the third employee at TD with a Twitter handle and I didn't do anything in real time. Like nothing.
That's great.
Everything was 3 or 4 days later. And like, you sit there as a startup and you're like, there's no rules to this game. And I think when you and I sat down and we were chatting over a beer once, I kind of gave you the analogy of it's a street fight. It's hand-to-hand combat, right? And it's you basically have no rules and you can do anything you want for the most part. And it's up to you to create and make innovation happen. And there's no constraints, but there's also no infrastructure. There's no brand. There's no back office. There's no resources. Like you got to be super creative at the earliest stages of company to find any growth. So those were things that were obviously you just couldn't be prepared for when you left corporate.
And now that you've developed more as an entrepreneur, I mean, you know, you've had years of experience at this point, you've developed your entrepreneurial personality, your character. What about you makes you, or what qualities of you as an entrepreneur are Ali Dalla more so than anyone else?
Huh, damn, I got to humble brag a bit. I get like, my CEO coach refers to it as like, what's your superpower, right? And I think that there's a few things that I have. So one is, I believe that I can see somewhat into the future of an industry and be pretty close to right as to where it might go using technology as a way to transform. And in my industry specifically, you know, we made a couple of really big assumptions and bets in 2016. We've been very right on those bets in terms of where the industry was going to go. And I think that's somewhat of a superpower. Another thing is you know, to be able to truly inspire people. You know, if you're going to build a startup, you have to inspire talent. You have to inspire customers. You have to inspire investors. You have to inspire, you know, basically anybody who's willing to hear your story. And I think that I've somehow been able to turn an idea into a narrative that people can get behind. And then the last thing is you know, this ability to kind of create a product experience that can create a wow moment. And, you know, with, again, not a lot of resources in our early days, we built some really unique things and things that were very much ahead of their time back in 2016. And now we're doing more cutting edge things now. And so I think those are really my three superpowers.
I love that. I'm going to embarrass you for a second here. I remember visiting you and your offices years ago, and just there was something about the way in which you in particular interacted with your company, the people of your company, the genuine value I could see in your eyes for them. And also, I remember you telling me something in particular, which was, and I'm going to botch this, and I want you to correct me right after. If you're not comfortable working with any of your for any of your employees, sort of flipping the hierarchy or the structure there, then you know you're doing it wrong. And I want you to correct me on that one. But always stuck with me.
Yeah, I think it was something like in the earliest days, when you hire your team, in an alternate universe, would you work for them? I think that it was something like that. And
beautiful.
And I think it's a really great way to kind of think about early team building, right? Because your earliest team members of a startup are effectively, like, if they're not co-founders, they're pretty close to it because, you know, you're all kind of running together, trying to figure it out as you go. And if you don't have the respect for these people in terms of, like, I would go and grind with you if the roles were reversed, it's probably not going to be that successful. And so, you know, that's a barometer that I've taken in terms of talent recruiting, which is like, in an alternate universe, would I come work at your startup?
Love it. There you go. You said it way better than I did, as I predicted. So I can make big bets too myself. Nice. So another thing I wanted to talk to you about also is, you know, one of the reasons we vibed so much is because athletics had a major influence on you growing up, as it did for me as well. And you know, you were a ball player, you know, you still love your Jordans. You're still wearing your Jordans around, which I love to death. And I just, you know, I wanted to ask you, like, you know, what kind of impact has athletics had, and basketball in particular, on you know, who you are today?
Yeah, man, I could write a book on this. I think athletics and you know, sports for me, basketball, of course, being the primary, but even, you know, like boxing was another big influence for me growing up. There are a few things that I've taken away, right? Number one is that there is no shortcut to greatness. There is no shortcut to greatness. And if you're going to be a craftsperson and you're going to be a master in your craft, you got to put in the work. Like, people get lucky breaks and all that, and that's cool. And you need that. You definitely need lucky breaks. Let's not kid ourselves, but nothing replaces hard work. And maybe that's just my old school brain talking, right? But like, you just need reps, you need repetition, and nothing will get you there more than doing the work. And so for me, it's just about the grind, man. It's about the hustle. It's about putting your head down and just working. The second thing is the value of a team, right? Like, you can have the best individual talent. You know, we've all seen those teams in sports that, like, you look at the roster, you're like, my God, that team should destroy everybody, but it doesn't happen. And a team that might be built of maybe not the best individual teams, but the best collective unit. It's a beautiful thing. It's a special thing when you see that happen and you experience that as an athlete, and then it kind of tells you how to think about constructing a unit as a group. And then the other thing is overcoming adversity. Like, you know, there's games in your career, you know, in my case playing ball, where you go down 15 points and a half. Like, it didn't happen very often to my teams, luckily, but like, those games happen. And you have a choice going into the third quarter, right? You're either going to just curl up and just say, all right, this one's done, or you're going to like buckle down, get every stop, full court press, and you're going to win the game and come back and hit that three to put it into OT and then go crush the overtime and win the game. And to me, it's like that never give up mindset. it doesn't really matter to me how many points behind you think you might be. It's like, you're just going to work. You're going to keep your head down and just focus on the possession in front of you. Focus on that next shot, because the next one's going to go in. And I think, again, it's just given me a lot of confidence that I can run through a brick wall. Because, you know, quite frankly, Noah, if you think about the archetype of a basketball player that plays competitive and at a high level, I mean, they're super tall. They're very athletic in their build, right? Like, I'm 6 feet, maybe 6'1" on a good day, right? I was never like a super athlete, especially after going through some surgeries and stuff. But like, I played a high IQ basketball game, right? So it kind of taught me that like, you don't always have to be the best on paper. You can think the game really differently. And so I try to bring that type of mindset, is like, you know, we might not have the most capital out of every company that raises capital. We might not have the most resources, but we can outthink people, we can out hustle people, and we can buckle down when the game's on the line and win.
That is literally the greatest analogy I've ever heard when it comes to founding a company. Oh my goodness, man. Like, hustle ball, hustle basketball is where it's at. Like, that's where the, I mean, maybe not where the stars make their money, but that's when, if you're talking college or high school basketball, when, you know, the talents divide isn't entirely that crazy and it's about getting wins. Like, hustle is where it's at. And hustle is what I respect the most. And so, yeah, you know, the fact that that mentality has translated from your experience playing ball in towards founding a company, running the startup, doing crazy, like, shit, I'm going to swear on this pod, in the insurtech world, I think it's incredible.
Noah, let's talk about shit for a second, since you brought it up. No, seriously, because I think too many people, right, who might be listening or think about entrepreneurship, they see the headliners, right? They see the TechCrunch, the BetaKit, the Forbes stuff. They see all the positive stuff. What they don't see is the shit. What they don't see is you grinding till 2 a.m. And by the way, this isn't a badge of honor. And I'm not saying that people should be working like this, but like, people don't see those things where you have to give up your social time. You have to give up your family time. You're putting all of this on the line for a vision and something that you believe needs to exist in the world. It's like, you know, RIP to my man, Bean Bryant, but like, nobody saw Kobe in the gym shooting at 2 a.m. You know, there's a story that when Kobe Bryant used to go to another city, come off the plane, didn't matter what time he would land, he would go to a local gym and put up jumpers in every single city. All right. So you imagine, right? It's 2 a.m. He's just landed and he goes to a high school gym and puts up his 1,000 shots. Nobody's watching. There's no cameras on. And he's there grinding. Why? Because he's a craftsman, because he believed in his craft and he knew that putting in the work would get him to that peak. And so I just can't stress it enough. Like, there's no shortcuts here, my man.
Fair enough. And I know, you know, and, you know, I'm going to plug this on the pod, but you just had a second child, a baby boy, and, yep. You know, balancing work life and family and entrepreneurship is not easy. And it's only going to get harder now that you have a second kid. So, you know, I respect that kind of hustle.
Appreciate you.
All right, my man. It's been an absolute pleasure. I feel like just the amount of wisdom that was just shared from you on this podcast is like overwhelming for me. I hope the audience, I hope whoever's listening survives the last 20 minutes. But I appreciate your time always, Ali, and best of luck with all things Finneo.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, man. It's been a real pleasure.